Hi, this is Russell Morris, and you're listening to Mark Kopeloff on the station that sounds good to me, 88.3 Southern FM.
Come and see the real thing, come and see the real thing, come and see. Come and see the
I'm going to get Michael on the phone from the Bad Loves. He's the singer, songwriter and guitarist from the Bad Loves, and we're going to talk about their new song. But first, let's have a listen to one of their songs called Green Limousine. Oh, yeah, Green Limousine. Hello, Michael. Welcome to 88.3 Southern FM.
Mark, thank you. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Look, Green Limousine, we kicked off with that, which was a hit for you guys in the 90s, alongside with other hits, including Lost, Caroline, Slave, Barefoot Bride, and The Wait with Jimmy Barnes. And you guys have received 3 ARIA Awards, and your debut album, Get On Board, stayed in the chart for 69 weeks, which is nearly 1.5 years. How is that possible? You must have been so happy. Wow.
I think it just got jammed in there somewhere. I couldn't budge it. No, it was a good run. A bit surreal.
Wow. And so do you have a green limousine?
Sadly, I do.
Do you?
yeah, but it's not a limousine, unfortunately. It's very much more utilitarian than that. It's green. Much to my family's entertainment when they saw it.
Of course.
Yes, I get stirred about it. Well, I'm too happy. My next car will be white.
Well, before we talk about your new song, can you tell people a bit about the Bad Loves, if anyone's listening who mightn't be that familiar with your stuff? Because you're the singer, songwriter, and guitarist. When did the band start?
It started in 1989.
Wow.
I care not to remember how many years that is, or add them up at least. But 89, we were kind of a bungalow band. It started in the bungalow and evolved from there, and eventually went out on the road. But we were recording original songs from the get go.
So you weren't a garage band.
We weren't a garage band. Very telling, you know. But we eventually we haunted all the local pubs and clubs and things that would have us, and played for years and years under the radar before we got. Got noticed, so it took a while, and it was a hard slog, but it was great fun.
It's good the way musos don't give up, isn't it? Because it's there's so many people I've interviewed over the years where they talk about their first three songs. Well, for example, the Young Rascals, I'm a big fan of theirs, and Felix Cavalieri was telling me how I think they had three singles, and he said they sort of went lead, and they were so worried. They thought, because he knew that they had a great sound, but he was worried the record companies were naturally going to go, well, you're not selling enough, sorry, we'll have to cancel your contract. And then, I was mentioning this before, and then they recorded Good Love and went through the roof, you know. So I suppose the lesson is, don't give up, keep going.
Very much so, and to be honest, we found it quite liberating that we were getting passed over by all the major record companies, and all our mates' bands were getting signed, and it's kind of like, well, we better enjoy ourselves, because this is just for us, you know, no one's listening. So it was actually quite liberating, because we did stay under the radar for a long time. It was never an outfit designed for commercial success, and that sounds a bit trite or quaint, but it's the truth. The '80s, the whole '80s music trend, I found so disgusting for the most part, with very few things to redeem it. Yeah. And the Bad Loves was put together, and written for as some sort of antidote to the '80s. That's how I felt about it, and that's how I sort of pushed it that way, to get a bit of traditional roots sort of music back in. And so we were just enjoying ourselves, we were just having a ball, but we weren't having success. Like, it was it just no one was listening for a long, long time. So it was pretty good fun.
Well, you've got something in common with my idols, the Beatles. I don't want to bore everyone with this, but it's well known that their manager Brian Epstein nearly gave up. They were turned down by literally every record company in London, until George Martin heard them. But anyway,
it's still incredible to hear that, isn't it? Just, yeah. Well, like, it's incredible.
Yeah, but can I, even though I'm a Beatle historian, can I say that I've heard that demo that Brian was flogging around, and Brian Epstein, may rest in peace, but in my opinion, made a very bad mistake. He wrote up the song list for them to do, and it was the wrong song list. He wanted it to be come across as a middle-of-the-road sort of band, so there was no Twist and Shout, there was no I Saw Her Standing There, which they'd already been doing for years anyway. He said, no, it's got to be more the Sheik of Araby. It was just a terrible mistake. But anyway, he made up for it later. But so let's have a talk about, now, you've released your first song in 20 years called, now this is the longest song title I've ever played on air in 22 years. It's called Soul Brother Truckin' Song. That's the actual title. It's a very long title, isn't it? So
it is a long title. That's just how it appeared on my recording stat sheet when I was tracking the thing. Yeah. And when we got together, everyone questioned it. But that's how it's just kind of stuck all as one word.
Yeah, but it's got a great groove to it, doesn't it?
Well, we're trying, because the song's set in the desert, in the outback. I wanted to have a really good sort of lilting groove to it, and the it was kind of a natural fit for the band. They were all straight into it. It just felt, you know, fit like a glove, the feel of it.
Yes.
And it was just getting the atmosphere of the song itself right, but somehow getting the feeling of the outback, you know, sort of outside Alice Springs, which is where the story kind of set.
So as I mentioned, it's the first song you've released in 20 years. Now, I've heard of bands coming back together after a huge break, and they reckon, you know, after one or two rehearsals, it's like there hadn't been a break. Was that how it was like for you guys?
I can well believe that, because that's exactly how it is. And the only thing I can liken it to, because it's quite freaky, when you come off stage after the first couple of shows, it's like head shaking. You think to yourself, how come it's so natural? We've had to rehearse other projects till the cows come home to not even get that close of a fabric in the sound. But for people with familiar sort of relationships, you know, familiar dialogue, musical dialogue, it just kind of knits. It's an alchemy that can't be... Really, it's kind of like getting together with old mates you haven't seen for 20 years, and all of a sudden, it's like you were never apart. You know, you're still the same sense of humour, same things that, you know, the same aggravations, everything. The whole kit and caboodle is back there in 3D again, like it never went away.
Yeah, I suppose you stand and look at each other and you think to yourself, gee, last time he didn't have grey hair and all this sort of stuff, but you might voice it, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's the only thing that seems to have changed. But that automatic musical dialogue where we just flick off in a certain direction, unannounced, just kind of happens spontaneously without any cues or anything. And that's because we know each other's musically so well, you know. So we're very lucky. That's one of the few benefits, I suppose, of having however many years that is, 25, 20, whatever it is, years behind us as a band, people have an automatic musicality about, you know.
Yeah, well, earlier tonight I was talking to Ross Wilson, and he was talking about Ross Hannaford, and I'm a big fan of both of those guys. And
I'm a huge fan of Hannaford.
Yeah, and exactly. But such a great guitarist, and Ross was talking about, you know, Ross Hannaford was playing that amazing guitar at 20. You know, so I just have this theory that to some degree musicians are born with a certain amount of music ability in them, and that's why I think that you guys, you know, who get back together after years later, one or two rehearsals and that's it, you're up and running again. You don't have to spend a year getting back to where you were.
Yeah, well, we're more famous for the fact that we never rehearse than we are for our music.
Okay.
In amongst our own people, because to me it's one of the areas that kills the spirit of the music.
Mm.
I hate rehearsal rooms. I hate rehearsals. Mm. But getting up on stage slightly underdone, not a bad thing, because it keeps you on your toes. It's great fun, you know.
Yeah. Well,
but speaking of Ross Hannaford, I've got to say, I've always loved him, and Ross Wilson as well, of course, because I had still have the Daddy Cool records.
Yes.
but Hannaford, I actually believe he was genius. I it came upon me when I saw him playing solo. There was about me and about three other people in the room, over in Williamstown, playing his electric guitar, and I was sat right in front of him, and I could not believe what I was hearing. He never played one familiar or cliche thing all night. He was in some zone. I don't know where he was, and I was speechless, as much as I am now remembering the event, but I was speechless afterwards, and I realised he was genius, like truly genius player.
Because you're a guitarist, so you know even more than the people who, you know, maybe aren't musos. So coming from a muso yourself, it's a big compliment. I mean, I remember when I was young, I ran into Ross Wilson in town and had a chat to him, and I said, you know, Ross Hannaford's playing is just... You know, I reckon I said something like, you know, he was a world-class guitarist. He said, you know what, he still is.
Yeah.
You know, so there you go.
Absolutely. And a lot of people will remember him busking outside the South Melbourne Market.
Yeah.
In later years.
Yes.
He was genius. Well, just fabulous.
If anyone wants to hear what we're talking about, just put on any Daddy Cool song and listen to the lead guitar work and you'll hear what we're talking about. But look, we're going to go out with this song. How long did it take you to write it? Was it a long effort or pretty quick song?
Actually, we had the song, the music itself was around for a long time, but the story took a little while to gel, took a couple of years. Oh. And so it had been recorded early on and really sucked, actually. But apart from the musical side of it, was okay. But it didn't until the concept came together. And then it all gelled and worked. But a couple of years, I suppose, yeah.
Wow.
And we've just released the video to it as well, which is probably worth a bit of a look. It's a bit of a lark.
Yes.
It reminds me of a... demented version of Ross Hannaford's helicopter hat.
I'm going to ask each of my guests tonight. So you're all on social media, I assume. So after this current situation with the virus has passed, looks like most people won't be gigging till the end of the year. But where do you think you will be gigging when you do get up and running again? Have you got any plans at the moment, or just play?
I think we're doing a show with another one of my all-time heroes, Richard Clapton. But I think that's September or November, maybe.
Okay.
Long time. It's the only thing that's locked down, but there'll definitely be shows.
Great.
Before that, I would say.
Yeah, all right. Well, look, Michael, thank you very much for coming on. All the best with the Bad Loves. And let's go out by having a listen to your new groovy song with a very long title called Soul Brother Truckin' Song.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Good on you.
All right. Thanks very much, Michael. Bye.
Cheers, mate. Bye. Some wine, help me cool my
to track me down. Yeah, but I left all that trouble in town. I see the road ahead of me, and it's all right to move on. Keep on trying. Keep on. Keep on trying. Right on. Right on. Keep on trying. To the light. So, brother, trucking off.